This is the Radical Geek signing off. But coming up next is Nutty Bites with your geek queen, Nutty Nuchas, and her upside down and flying co-host, Tech. So sit back, enjoy, and don't touch that dial on your podcatcher.
Hello, Mixed Nutcases. This is Nuchas, and we've got an episode of Nutty Bites for you today about something very near and dear to our heart and close in location. That would be Letterkenny. With me, as always, we have...
Hi, I'm the Tex.
Just a DJ from upcountry. And returning some of our very good friends.
Hi, I'm Angela.
And I'm Heath.
And you may have heard those voices on this podcast before, or you may have heard them on the Red Dwarf Introcast, which is a fantastic podcast. And I know you've heard the promo for that before. So we are going to be talking about the TV show Letterkenny. Letterkenny is a TV show that takes place in a small town in Ontario. And I'm doing finger quotes. You can't hear that, but I am doing them. And it was made primarily for Bell Media for their streaming service Crave. And then it went out to Hulu. And now it's being put out on Hulu and being represented as a Hulu original in the United States, but it is still on Crave. There are, what are there, 8 seasons and a good number of specials.
It's like if somebody...
Hulu just includes... they just include like an episode 7 that they don't really differentiate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's like somebody went to Jared Kiso and said, how Canadian can you be? And he's like, hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
And then decides to...
Hold my puppers.
Oh, I'll hold your beer.
Hold my puppers. And then just starts telling stories of the stuff that happened in his town the other day.
Yep.
But the beauty of Letterkenny is that, you know, it's a lot like another Canadian show, The Trailer Park Boys, where it is just tongue jammed firmly in cheek, dripping with Canadiana. Confusing to everyone else and really, really, really well written and really, really, really funny. At the heart of it, it is entirely Canadian in that as much as it is about drugs, alcohol, fighting for absolutely no reason, and a bunch of really illegal behavior, at its heart, it's about caring about your family, helping people when they ask you, being neighborly, no matter how annoying or weird your neighbors are.
Being a good person.
Yeah,
I think just
trying to be a good person, even when being a good person means kicking the crap of everyone in your town because your sister is the hottest girl in town.
Yeah.
Or possibly the world. Let's not limit that.
Yeah. But there is no actual town of Letterkenny, Ontario.
Yeah.
There was. It's an abandoned mining town. It's up by Algonquin Park, northwest-ish of Ottawa, sort of in the middle of absolutely nowhere. It's just this abandoned town. There's a couple buildings and a road left and not much. But the area that they're from, the area that they talk about, makes sense in the context of the show. Like when they start going to Quebec or the other 84 ways that they pronounce it that are all correct and mostly wrong. But it's actually very close to the Quebec border. And when they talk, and the town where I'm from is from about 2.5-3 hours north of where the actual town of Letterkenny is. So when they talk about the degens from up country on their snowmobiles on the trails by the lake, and yeah, that's me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am the degen from up country. I did not say a boot, I say about. See, I am out and about in a boat. But because there is a slight elongation of the ow sound, everybody thinks we're saying oot in a boot.
There are some that do talk that way. I will say I'm very happy that Letterkenny is giving us different accents.
Yeah.
So how did you guys find it?
Yeah, tell us of your journey.
A friend of ours that we work with just kept on recommending it, you know, and we were totally in for watching it. We just had a lot on our TV rotation schedule, so we sort of dragged our feet a bit.
And I was picturing, like, she kept describing it as, you know, they're Canadian rednecks, and, one of them fights, and, like, I was picturing, like, not smart comedy.
Like, you know? Making fun of a small town kind of a thing.
Exactly.
Kinda, yeah,
we were kind of worried that it would be punching down, and it completely does not in any sense.
No.
We had a lot of people telling us to watch it. Oddly enough, one of them being my brother that lives in New York, telling us to watch it. And there were a lot of tech students that were watching it and all thinking that they were the Letterkenny guys. And it did kind of, I'm like, I don't know. And people were like, oh, did you like FUBAR? It's like FUBAR. And I'm like, no, I didn't really like FUBAR. I mean, FUBAR was okay, but it's not like
it's great. It's a guerrilla documentary movie. Done quite a few years ago, which if Trailer Park Boys is East Coast and Letterkenny is Ontario, FUBAR is Alberta culture. It's the West. It's cowboy culture. And it's, their friend has to go in for, testicular cancer surgery. So his friends take him out for one last night with the boys. And they go on this like weekend drunken bender. Yeah, to get FUBAR'd, because he may not survive the operation.
Like,
The cameraman dies when they go whitewater rafting. And
spoilers.
It is dumb. But you have to watch all three to sort of get an idea of Canadian culture and how it changes, because our country is massive and we have a lot of different cultures. But yeah, you're right in what you're saying, that, you know, Letterkenny does not punch down, and there's a lot of it's the writing on this show is just so bloody smart.
Impressive.
I mean, the amount of things that they do where they do sentences where every letter it's the sequential letters of the alphabet. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah, I was thinking about us doing an opening like that, and then I realized I can't do that. I don't have that talent.
Or what was the one? It was a challenge.
Acrostics can be difficult. Better work really hard for that. Can't mess up when you're trying to do it. Yeah. Don't even think about attempting.
Even if you're trained.
Forget about it. We're just not going to do it.
Going forward.
Hello?
Hi. I am going to say the next thing with just this. No, the one where they do the consecutive alliterations.
Yeah.
Yes.
How many alliterative phrases they can get through in a row. It boggles my mind. The level of smarts it takes to write this stuff and then write it into a dorky comedy and make it funny.
Yeah. I think it grabbed me in the first scene when, and I've actually watched the Letterkenny Problems web series version of that scene where it's the hockey bros coming up and wanting to pick a fight after having a date with Katie, and Wayne and Derry just taking them down verbally.
Yeah. So FUBAR, I'm going to go through the different, Canadian documentary style shows. It's really funny. They're all fake documentaries. So FUBAR is a bunch of pretty much degenerates, you know, people that have screwed up their lives. Trailer Park Boys, which by the way, I love, is about a bunch of criminals, petty criminals. And then you've got Letterkenny, where they're hardworking farmers and actual positive, you know, actual examples of positive masculinity. So much so that the podcast, Paging Dr. Nerdlove, did a whole episode on positive masculinity using Letterkenny and, oddly enough, using the Hockey Boys as their example, as his example.
Not sure that's PC Boys.
Of positive masculinity. And one of the reasons, and I really appreciate what he did, one of the reasons that he did this is he said, you know, there's a lot that you can choose from, but what's great about Riley and Jonesy is that they have development and that they've done bad in the past and they grow from it and they're trying and they make mistakes. And that's more of a real experience and something that people can identify with. And I thought that was really interesting. And if you look at their arc over the entire series, that is 100% true.
I'm not sure that Trisha, my women's studies professor, would agree with you.
But. Well, you know, I would love to have Trisha, the women's studies professor, on Nutty Bites. So, Trisha, just know that this is an invite. by the way, FaZe did give us a link. There is a town in Ireland called Letterkenny. And it is the largest, most populous town
in County Donegal.
So while it's a ghost town in Ontario, it's a thriving town in in Ireland, so that's kind of fun.
Mm. Okay, so within the canon of Letterkenny, then during St. Perfect's Day, they state that Letterkenny, Ontario, was named after the Letterkenny in Ireland. But then a few seasons later, they have a John Letterkenny field.
Yes.
Yeah.
That the Tiki Torch guys were were congregating in. And I'm like, which is it?
Yes.
It works for the power of plot.
Which is it, show?
Or maybe John Letterkenny was named for the town of Letterkenny, but
what?
Wait, no. Anyway,
he changed his name to be cool. I mean,
that's
there you go. Yes.
That's what's up.
He changed his name because he loved Letterkenny so much.
Mm. That's what I appreciate about him.
Oh, is that so what apparently that is our Canadian headcanon now. Jax does say, "Nice execution. You're doing terrific." So let's go over the characters a little bit.
Okay.
So we got Wayne. Who wants to describe Wayne?
Wayne's the toughest guy in Letterkenny.
Mm-hmm.
He has to be.
Also probably autistic.
Probably very,
He's on the spectrum.
We realized that this has been a conversation within the Letterkenny fandom. But especially after we saw the Hulu did these little Kenny. Little Kenny episodes that showed their past. And at one point, like, his teacher talks to him and he doesn't reply. And she's like, well, we're going to work on that. And maybe if you make some more friends. But then as we look at his behavior, it's very rigid. And all through the series, as he quotes sort of the Wayne code. If a friend asks for help, you help him. You don't air your dirty laundry. More hands makes less work.
Doesn't kiss and tell.
Exactly. Yeah. He has these sort of codified standards and rules. And I kind of think this was a coping mechanism for him, because if he didn't know how to react in a given situation, he had a set of rules to go back to help him read the situation a little bit better, which can be difficult.
He always tucks his shirt in. His code always continues, because he always tucks his shirt in. He never wears a belt. Why do I need to wear a belt? Like, my pants stay on, you know?
But, him not wearing a belt. Well, him not wearing a belt
really bothers me.
Him not wearing a tube. Yeah. And not wearing gloves really bother me.
Now, how could you be? In summer in Alabama, you're still wearing a toque.
See,
this is very very lightweight, and I'm doing this mainly to keep my hair out of my eyes. I've been growing my hair out, and so sometimes it's just sort of it going on here.
You got
it's
a shag?
Very long.
You got a shag dog thing going on?
Yeah.
Those are the things that bother me about Wayne. But yes, he does. He has these very specific rules that he lives by.
And then in that scene where he was describing the body language of attraction, it was very, very clinical, like he'd researched it on the internet. And whenever he doesn't know something, he researches it on the internet. He is very structured
And he'll be dropping odd facts about wildlife and things like that.
Especially if he doesn't want to talk about what everyone else is talking about.
And the way that he trusts and relies on Katie, like you said, he trusts her to more than most men for just about anything.
Yep.
But he seems to let Katie be the decision maker for a lot of things. And I feel like they have this sort of relationship to where they've been helping each other in that way.
You know, he's protective of Katie.
He always respects her.
Yeah,
right to make her own choices, always. Right.
She always gets autonomy.
But it's when she needs help, whether she asks for it or not, he's always there, and then he gives the help, usually in the form of, beating somebody down. But when help is required, it's there. And that, Katie's a big girl, she can make up her own choices, and that even though she's, in a throuple with Riley and Jonesy...
She is very much in charge of that, too.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, she's 100% in charge of that.
The only reason that happens is because that's what she wants to have happen.
Yeah.
You know?
Katie is very sex positive. She knows what she wants out of a given relationship and articulates it well.
And that's the other thing I'll say about the show. They are very sex positive. They don't shame anything, which is pretty cool.
Except for cheating. Cheating is the one thing that they'll shame, because that's not about the sex. That's about how you treat people.
Yeah. And again, you can be in a throuple, you can be in an open relationship, you can be in all these different types of things, as long as everybody knows, because that's not cheating. But when it's cheating, it's cheating. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Violation is a violation. Often it's like, why does Wayne have to be so fighty? Why does he have to be the toughest guy in Letterkenny? Tech?
Because his sister's the hottest girl in town.
Yeah.
You then instantly become the toughest guy in Letterkenny.
So while Katie knows what she wants and everything is, and he trusts her completely, he did grow up with his little sister becoming the hottest girl in town. And there is a protective nature. And I don't think that that's a, because I'm a man, I'm going to protect her. I think it's, I'm her older sibling, I'm going to protect her.
When someone asks for help, you help them.
Exactly.
And it's not just Katie, though.
Dairy too.
They tell stories about him protecting Dairy.
Exactly.
He even fights to protect the Skids, even though he doesn't particularly like them at that point. But when somebody is being bullied, when somebody in a position of strength is taking advantage of someone of a position of weakness, he fights not because, you know, he likes hurting people. He fights because it's the right thing to do at the time, he thinks.
Well, everybody he has a problem with in that show, he eventually helps.
Yeah, I mean, Tannis that burnt down the stand, and then they end up helping.
Right. So Tannis, he even helps the McMurrays. He helps the Pastor Glenn. Yep. He helps the Skids, all in turn, all against each other. Because if someone asks for help, you help them.
He even helps the people that he gets into a fight with at the ice fishing.
But I love that even when he is fighting just for his title of toughest in Letterkenny, he will beat the snot out of somebody and then help them up, share a beer with them. You know?
Oh, what was the
cupcake?
What was the name of those two other fighters? The guys that were running the UFC gym. It was Joint Boy and
Tyson.
I just call him Vin Diesel Light.
Yeah. JB though is like, I love him so much.
I always think of Joint Boy as the second toughest guy in Letterkenny.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
I've yet to.
Agreed. Agreed.
I think they later say that Tyson and Joint Boy fought to a draw. They knocked each other out. But I always think Joint Boy is the second toughest guy in Letterkenny.
Yeah. Yeah. So, so now we've talked about Wayne. Katie.
We kind of talked about Katie.
We talked about her a little bit. Yeah. But I do want to mention a couple things about Katie. Like, for instance, there are times when Katie wants to fight to protect Wayne. But
well,
she
and her one move.
One specific move.
She has one specific move. This is true. This is true. And dang, it's a dirty move. It's a dirty move that hurts.
Who did she kick? It wasn't Tannis. Tannis.
Tannis?
Right.
Yep.
I love that she kicks her so hard and so deep the foot comes out the other side. You know,
she's Tannis.
And Mary Fred.
She kicked Marie Fred. And
she's kicked Angel.
Angie, yeah.
Wait, I thought she punched Angela. Did she kick Angela?
I thought she kicked her. I thought she did both.
Maybe.
She threatened her, too. Oh, man.
Yeah.
And also came on to her at the same time. Very confusing.
It's very confusing.
Katie can be confusing. I mean, I'm really confused by one scene in one of the episodes where Katie's having a bad day, and she has her pick of the litter at the dance of who she gets to take home for a dalliance, and she picked the wrong McMurray sister.
Well, it's not a sister.
Sister-in-law.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, why would
McMurray.
You? Why would you pick Mrs. McMurray?
I think because she already has been with Bonnie.
Well, then do it again. It can't be that bad.
No, I'm sure it's not. But it was what she wanted.
For the record, Bonnie McMurray.
We're quoting, not being creeps.
I screamed though when it was confirmed. Like, a lot of shows will just like play around with the idea of one of the main characters being bi or pan or whatever, but when it was actually confirmed, I was like, this is a cool drink of water on a nice day.
Well, that's
I agree.
This is a very Canadian thing that's been showing up in a lot of our comedies now. You know, starting with Trailer Park Boys, now on with this, and shows like Schitt's Creek and a couple other ones that...
By the way, y'all, if you have not watched Schitt's Creek, that's your next thing
It's spelled
watch.
With an S-C-H, so it's not a
We
stress.
Watched the first episode. We need to pick it up.
Which, what's her face? Who plays the matriarch?
Catherine O'Hara. I love her.
She's so good.
Yes.
She's so good.
So good.
See you, Dipper.
Hi, Dipper.
As you keep going... throughout the series, it just gets better and better and better.
But we don't have much to do right now, so.
But yeah, so
we can get through it.
So my point is that the characters have the sexuality that they have, and it's. Mm-hmm. It's there because that's the character. It's not there because we want to bang a big drum about it. And the fact that why, you know, some characters are gay, straight, pan, you know, omni, demi, what, ace,
poly,
whatever. Oh God, oh the McMurrays, oh they hurt. So
I was talking about this the other day. The difference in having a character who is gay, bi, trans, whatever, and the gay character.
Yes.
The trans character.
Oh, exactly.
Exactly.
And
there's quite a few characters on this show that have fluidity. I will say that I don't think they ever say bi, though. And that's a thing that TV falls into. They never quite say bi.
But you get... what I love about it is that it's there, it exists, and of all the reasons... that the people in Letterkenny have to hate each other and all of the reasons that they have to fight, sexuality is never one of them.
Never.
Like, they're not picking on Pastor Glenn because he's gay. They're picking on Pastor Glenn because...
What?
What?
Is he, though? Is he?
What team?
Catholicism.
I do love there's that one episode with the hot tub. Where the McMurrays are trying to get people into the lifestyle.
What? The dairy farmer's lifestyle?
No. The lifestyle.
And the amount of time it takes each character to realize what's happening.
And Glenn is one of the last characters. And he's in the hot tub with them. And he goes, oh, I see what y'all want. Oh, no, that's a sin. I can't do that, but y'all have fun. And he leaves. And it's not, I'm not going to judge you. It's just, I can't do it because, you know, I'm a pastor, but you have fun. Go do your thing. And it's no judgment when you would totally expect that from a pastor.
And there's the lawnmower.
Yeah, sorry if you're hearing a lawnmower. Our neighbors are.
That's all right. Jack
says Team God clearly is his team.
Yes.
His team is clear. Team God.
I know we were on Katie and we've gotten sidetracked, but about Glenn, I'm very curious. Glenn's accent is the very, what I would call stereotypical Southern preacher accent. Mm-hmm. Somewhat effeminized perhaps, based for his character, but is that a thing? Like, do people have his specific accent? In Canada?
No.
Is he meant to be from somewhere else? Or?
I believe he's meant to be from the South.
He's meant to be Southern. If you go into the West, if you go to Alberta, you will get some, because it is, you know, cowboy country. It's, you know, northern Montana. I mean, you will get like that Western, draw, but that's mainly because they listen to a lot of country music and, you know, ride cows all day, but there is no
there's no Ontario Canadian that sounds like that.
No,
but there are cases of you know, traveling evangelical preachers, you know, coming up from the South.
Sure.
When
missionaries,
we were missionaries for sure.
Heathen Canadians.
we had quite a few that came to Nova Scotia. A good friend of ours from Utah went to where did he go? He went somewhere in Canada too.
No, phased. Fargo is from the Upper Peninsula. That is that's Uper talk. That's northern United States. That's still like 5 or 6 hours south of my part of the country. So that's a completely different accent to what you'll see in Canada.
Yeah. But
don't you know?
Technically more northern than we are currently. Mm. So like you will have those traveling missionaries.
Sure,
I can say words.
I was just curious. I mean, that happens sometimes in movies. Like if there's a local sheriff who happens to be racist, no matter what state he's in, he's Southern. It's
for
really
some
weird.
Reason.
So no, I was just curious as if there's is there a branch of evangelical Canadians who have adopted this accent or what's going on with that?
No.
I
get it.
So that's.
Yeah.
So, but the interesting thing I do want to mention while we're talking about Glenn is that, so this show was created by the guy that plays Wayne and the guy that plays Derry. They just kind of like put it together. And then when they brought it to Crave, it then became the brainchild of the guy that plays Wayne and the guy that plays Glenn.
Oh.
So those are the two head writers, which is really okay. Interesting that so many of the jokes end up being, you know, at his character's expense.
I mean, that's a fun character to play, though.
It is.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
He picked one of the fun characters.
And speaking of continuity, in the first episode, he has an adopted daughter. And after that, we never see her again.
Also, yeah. Wait, was that an adopted daughter or a girlfriend?
No, that was his. He said adopted daughter. And she had, like, the Mennonite, like.
I thought that was a girlfriend.
No, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure. Because she said something about being adopted from him. Anyway.
Okay.
Yeah. But back to Katie.
Katie.
Oh, and Faye says, like, Mike Galis playing Mycroft and Sherlock. Yes.
Oh, Mark Gatiss, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, is that how I say it? I can't pronounce things.
It's a T, Nutty. Oh,
I can't see that. The text is too small. Nutty is blind. So, and for some reason, when I'm streaming like this, I can't make the chat bigger. Yeah. When I'm in other people's chats, I can make it bigger, but I can't make it bigger for me. So back to Katie. So I love that we get fluidity in Katie's sexuality. I love that she is ready to defend and fight for Wayne, but I also love that she waits for him to be okay with it. Mm-hmm. Because she's when he breaks up with Marie Fred and she wants to do something about it. And she and Mrs. McMurray and she and Bonnie, like all the women in the town want to do something about it, but they can't because Wayne's still processing. And when he's ready, they're like, all right, let's go to Quebec.
Can we up our levels? Nutty
up our levels?
Says he can't hear us.
Let me try something.
Okay. Who, so Nutty and Tech need to be louder or
yeah,
us?
Yeah, no, us. So
okay.
I'm going to up this. Is this any better? I feel like I'm so loud.
Oh, there we go.
Okay, there we go.
Too loud?
Yeah. No, we're good.
Okay.
You.
We can turn our volume down if need be, so we're good.
Okay. Yeah, is that better? Okay. It just, I have it so loud in my own ears that I think I'm shouting. So then they're off to Quebec. They go and they take care of business. But I love that she waits for him to say it's okay, just as he has waited for her in order to do anything. And he didn't beat up Jonesy and Riley and just took them down verbally because Katie didn't say that he could. And I like that.
How old do you think they were when their parents died?
I wondered about that.
Like, I've just been wondering how long it's just been the two of them.
Did they ever say the parents died?
I mean, if they're running the farm and living there and we'd have never seen the parents.
I just assumed we didn't see them. I didn't assume that the parents had died.
I had assumed that the parents moved to Florida like Uncle Eddie.
It's Chekhov's parents, right? They weren't on the mantle in the first act, so we don't see them in the third act. So they're not important to the story. It's not a story about them, so they don't show them.
Yeah.
See, my headcanon, and I guess just part of it being the way that Wayne and Katie interact was that the parents had passed away at some point and that they had just sort of had to run the farm.
Maybe
together.
When Wayne was like just an adult, like just 18.
But maybe not. I haven't really considered it.
No, you know what? If we're going to expand on this headcanon, they might have been younger. They might have been teenagers.
Yeah.
But the community of Letterkenny just sort of pitches in, and that's where you'd get people Derry who would come over, and you know McMurray and the rest of the Ag Council would come in and help them at harvest, and
exactly
you know helping them run the farm, which is why they're still running that little produce stand.
Yeah, well, and
that no one ever buys from.
Well, but it does seem like the produce on the produce stand is not just from their. It's not just from their farm. It feels like it's a town produce stand, which I wouldn't be surprised.
Like, because like they only ever really talk about hay and barley.
Barley.
So they may like trade that so they can get produce from the various farms so they can sell it.
And they raise dogs.
The people that grow vegetables, and we've seen them help them, is the local Mennonite. The local Mennonite family.
Are we going to segue to that now?
Huh?
Are we going to segue?
Yes, let's talk about that. Let's talk about the big dicks.
Okay, so
the big dick family.
D-Y-K-E.
D-Y-C-K.
Oh, D-Y-C-K. Okay, yes. D-Y-C-K.
It's Dutch.
It is. I'm assuming neither of you know the tall blonde Jebediah, the one playing Jebediah.
Well, wasn't he one of the Trailer Park Boys?
Yeah, it's J-Rock.
He was one of the Trailer Park Boys.
J to the R-O-C. It's the rapper.
And his lovely wife was in The Walking Dead once.
Oh.
Once.
Actually, that's something, by the way, I can't find. Like, we've known Mennonites. There's, you know, Mennonites around Mississippi and Alabama and everywhere. Mm-hmm. The adding once to everything is nothing I can ever find in the Mennonite dialect.
And it's nothing I've ever heard either. Nor have I, you know, the Mennonites I have met, because we'll normally see them in town.
Yeah.
And where I grew up, you know, there's a couple Mennonite communities around, and they'll come into town to do their shopping, and they talk like we do. They just dress in homemade clothes and have a communal van, and you know,
it could be different Mennonite. In different communities. I don't know.
Oh, the Mennonite bakery where we used to live.
Yeah.
Oh man,
it was awesome. They had
sausage rolls.
These sausage rolls, like you can. It was like in the Life Sucker Machine in The Princess Bride. Like you can feel a year being sucked away from your life as you eat these sausage rolls.
That sounds delicious.
It's worth it.
I want one. I got plenty of years. Let's go for a sausage roll.
When we lived on the East Coast, there was a farmer's market every weekend, and there was a Mennonite produce stand.
Oh, the Fredericton Farmer's Market on the South Side
had some incredibly fresh produce. It was really, really good.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
So Jonathan Torrance is his name. You know him as J-Rock. And Tech, you know him from?
Jonathan Torrance and I are almost the same age. He started in TV, I think he was maybe 11 or 12 on a kids. It was a Saturday morning kids consumer advocate TV show called Street Sense. And it was Street Sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was all about, toy reviews and product reviews and aimed at YA and young teenagers and, you know, how to get your first job, how to write a resume, how to, you know, things like that, you know, how to not get taken in by a scam online. And he started doing these shows. He parlayed that over into his own, after school talk show called Jonovision, which was really, really good.
Aww.
And then after that turned into him as J-Rock. He's a fill-in host on our national radio broadcaster, CBC. He does a arts and culture show called Q from time to time. He is Canadian broadcasting royalty.
He's like respectable broadcasting Canadiana, and then he plays J-Rock, which is like, speaking of degenerates, and now he's playing Jebediah Dick.
I will say, when I first saw him and he started talking for a hot second, I thought that it was John Hodgman, but...
I don't know who John Hodgman is. Who is that?
In the old Mac and PC commercials, he was PC.
Okay.
He was also one of the Daily Show reporter things.
Yeah.
He also has podcasts.
His name is PC. Like, he's nothing else but PC. Come on.
He also has a podcast called Judge John Hodgman, where he judges between people's minor quibbles.
Oh, that's funny.
And it's entertaining. Yeah.
Nice.
He is a wit.
Yes.
So it was really exciting to have that little cameo that showed up pretty late, but then we discovered that he actually did some of the writing for the show. Some of those episodes he wrote, which was kind of cool.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I don't know. After a while, like the Mennonites are part of like two episodes, and after a while the joke became
It's like, okay, you made the joke
already.
You made the joke.
In the second episode, especially, it was like, are these unused jokes that weren't quite good enough for the first episode?
it was a funny gag, but they definitely wore it thin.
They beat that dead horse.
Yeah, they beat that horse to death.
They wore a hole in it.
Oh no!
Once.
Oh no! 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 No!
But one of the while we're talking about characters, I want to talk about Derry for a second.
Yes.
Derry. He's so cute.
Derry. Because Derry is cute. And the thing about Derry is that he is an incredibly sensitive guy. As much as he is a tough scrapper and a farmer, you know, who never goes anywhere without his galoshes on. And, you know, he's all
farm clothes.
Yeah, he's farm clothes, barn clothes. And he's, you know, he's up for a fight whenever. But you've got things like the super soft birthday, which started off as a joke. And the point I want to make is that's how you make fun of your friends, you know, because they do it to make fun of him, but secretly he likes it, not so secretly. And
secretly, not so secretly, Wayne and Katie love it.
Right. But the joy of teasing him all year and then having this super soft birthday party is to show your friends, is to show their friend that they love him. And while making fun of him, it's never at his expense. It's always, you know, they're laughing with him while laughing at him.
The two words that he can't say, like...
Preface. Preface. Preface.
And then little Kenny, they gave him a stutter.
That makes sense.
Like, yeah, he has a stutter when he was way young, and some bullies were making fun of him. So, like...
Wayne stepped in.
After Derry had already stepped in when they were making fun of Katie...
I have to mention that to me, the actor that plays Derry is quite possibly one of the most attractive people on the show to me. It's something about his eyes and his smile, and I just love it. Aww. Now, Riley and Jonesy's, like, they're pretty. They are very pretty. They're too pretty for me.
What about Dax and Ron?
Which was the one that's like, one of them is just really too pretty for me. Like, wow. He needs to be in catalogs.
see, for me, it's Stuart. Like, he's a good looking dude.
Like, if you see him like, out of the greaser hair, hubba hubba. But when he's in the greaser hair, I just, even though it's a wig, I just can't. Yeah.
I could tell that they were making him up for the skid part and everything, but he has gorgeous eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
When he started, it became noticeable like halfway through some of the scenes when he started bulking up and he got like shredded. Well before they did that plot line when he started going to the gym to bulk up. The actor did a couple of military movies. And okay. I found them on IMDb. I haven't watched them, but you can see scenes of him wearing like a buzz cut and he's like all jacked up in a uniform and does not look anything like Stuart.
We were comparing that to like in an early Buffy when they were having Xander as sort of the nerdy weak guy, but he was so obviously jacked
he
under
had shoulders
those shirts
for days.
Nick Brendan is a big dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think the thing with Stuart with me, not only is the actor really nice looking, but it sort of sent me back to when I was 13 and a little goth girl myself. And
Tech, what about all the raver music?
I love the music.
I would have been that skid in the gas mask in the background, raving along with all of my friends in the combat boots.
Have those two ever had a single line, the two skids there?
I don't think so. No. But watching whatever they're doing in the background is always fun. Because they're always doing something.
Or they're just passed out on the couch.
And in the episode, the Easter one, where Stuart was bummed out that everyone was gone except for Rald, and Rald was like, well, let's watch this. And he's like, and miss out on this guy's commentary? And I'm like, what commentary?
yep, exactly. It's a mostly great gag. the Jack says, nope, they haven't had a line. confirmed. Can confirm. No lines. I love the skids. I really do. And I love that they have an arc. They have a full arc. And they go through different phases. Like when they do an intervention on Stuart, was amazing. And by the way, Rold is like one of my favorite characters.
So good.
I absolutely love Rold, and he is the only reason the Valentine's Day special is even worth watching.
When will this never-ending tension between myself and Dax and Ron end? I mean...
I knew you were all thinking it!
Everyone's wondering.
I love
the Valentine's special. I love the Valentine's special because one of the things that Letterkenny does really well is they will take characters that have either never interacted or had only negative interactions and are completely unlike each other and smash the action figures together and see what comes of it. It's amazing. The whole season where it was Glenn and the Skids fighting over territory. Mm-hmm. And
I dig it because there weren't, because they're like, there's not enough men towards women, and so like, and not everybody was fluid, yeah. That so you'd end up having very straight guys against very straight guys and very straight guys against very gay guys, and the conversations that they had were fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Oh, is this just gonna be a what, ask the gay guy, and it's like, really, can I, okay, so
I have all these questions.
Yeah, I loved the Skids fascination and Stuart's fascination with Glenn and using his preaching as a form of indoctrination and mind control for fun and profit. They hit him with a, Lord, forgive us when we're terrible, terrible sinners.
Or which one is it? It's Jonesy and all of his questions to Roll. Yeah. It's like, wait, so
yeah.
So, and Squirrely Dan getting all the baseball sex metaphors straight or not straight.
Yeah.
But that's when you get the foundation of the friendship. That same episode is when you get the foundation of the friendship between Stuart and Wayne, where they're sitting in the bar and all of a sudden they realize that you know, Skids and Hicks both like hockey and that they have all of these stats and all of these players. And
so hockey is a unifying trope for Canadians. Yep. And, Tech, you are not very into sports, and yet you can still hockey with the best of them, like talk hockey with the best of them.
Well, and it's very much a cultural thing. Like, we are inundated in it, and I don't watch a lot of hockey. I think the last time I watched a hockey game, I think I was a teenager. But I still have a favorite team. It's genetic, and I have to. And you know, you get into conversations at work, and you sort of pick up things at the water cooler, and it's just there. I mean, you guys are in Alabama. I'm pretty sure it's mostly football and NASCAR.
A lot of football, NASCAR, but I mean, football is the broader one, I think.
Yeah,
NASCAR. It's
especially the college teams. It's mostly college football.
The ones who are into NASCAR are super into NASCAR.
Yeah, but. And there are a few, like, baseball and basketball,
and
of course.
I don't really follow sports at all. And again, I'm a fan of people being a fan of things. I love that it gives people something to be passionate about and bond over. That's just never been my thing. But I still know the basics of football because I was a band nerd, and you have to go to the football games. And, we both went to Auburn, Jax, and so it's yep. War Eagle. And we're currently... we're teaching at Auburn University Montgomery, so we're still within the Auburn family.
Although we first went to Mississippi State University, and my mom went to Mississippi State.
Go Bulldogs.
And still had her cowbell from...
More cowbell.
Yes, this rusted cowbell from
back
when.
So we still have to know, you know, the basics of it and how to talk it, like you say, because it's so ingrained in the culture. We had to, at some points, put on subtitles and look up the slang of Letterkenny to understand a Bardowski and a Cheddar and all of the...
About 90% of those are over my head. I think they're over everyone's head. I think
so.
I think
even though Tech can hockey talk with the best of them, a lot of them are definite hockey player talk.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that... you can get by context because it's mostly about the patter more than it is about the actual words that they use. And it reminds me of another TV show, another comedy called The League.
Yes.
Which is all about, it's a comedy about a group of buddies in a fantasy football league. Yeah. But it's not about the fantasy football. The fantasy football is just kind of a backdrop. So they have players that show up and they mention stats and things, but it's nonsense words that, you know, if you understand football, you understand what they're talking about, but that's not the plot. That's not what it's about.
Yeah.
Riley and Jonesy talking about hockey or going to a rink. And of course, we have to mention Shorzy.
Shorzy, which is just what's his name? Jared Queso. And bodied by. That's his body. Yes. which is why his sleeves are always rolled down when he's Wayne.
You don't see the tattoos.
And when he rolls up his sleeves, it only goes to about like a few inches up. Yeah. So you don't see the tattoos.
I noticed something really interesting because we rewatched the first episode just before.
Just to see how far they've come.
Yeah. And when Wayne gets into his fight, when he goes after Angie's boyfriend for picking on the drunk dude, he just goes right into it and punches the guy. And then you can see a couple of frames later, he's torn like the edge of his shirt here. And then in every other fight, he does his cups first,
yep.
Well, so that he'll have room.
You missed a step. You have to take out the cigarette, flick the cigarette away, then undo your sleeves.
But yeah, that is continuity. Nice.
Also, take a drink.
Yeah.
And then after, you have to shake the wild eyes away. Yeah.
Who's the toughest guy in here? That'd be me.
Yeah, also, stands up like a Terminator every single time he gets out of a chair.
Riley and Jonesy are sweethearts. Just sort of skipping over to them. They are such sweethearts. Yeah. Like, I think they really got me when their coach yelled at them. I think it was a season ender, their coach yelled at them. And then they just look at each other and it's like, and they're like in tears and they're just like, my feelings are hurt. Yeah, so are mine. I want to skip Pracky. Well, no Pracky, no gang. Yeah.
Also, those two, I think, are more in love than any other two characters in the show. Sexuality aside.
So in love that they were willing to put Katie aside because they couldn't only have one of them date her. When she was like, I'm only willing to date one of you, they're like, we're not spending enough time and we're not sharing enough. It doesn't work for us.
But they are such stereotypes. And the thing is, I know those idiots. I know those idiots so well. The guys, they always talk trash. They always talk the good game. They never go to practice. They never get any ice time. But yet hockey player is such a big part of their personality. The only thing they didn't get into was the gear. Because every season, that kit bag would have to be full of like $3,000 of all the newest stuff. And it's all the brand name stuff that's going to make them the better player. And then they never touch the ice with it.
And it still reeks to high heaven. By the way, here's the thing. If you don't know hockey players, their gear reeks like worse than a dead body. Reeks like it's in the trunk and of the car and you can still smell it. Reeks like most hockey players have a garage just for their gear. Reeks. That's how bad it is. Yeah, there's no getting it clean or getting that smell out.
There's a wonderful commercial that played on TV for a while. I think it was for a hockey gear company, but the guy is walking out of his apartment building with the gear bag on his shoulder. He's walking to his car and all the flowers are wilting. The trees are dying. Cats are falling off balconies. Old ladies are flying off their rockers. Everything's dying around him as he's walking to his car with his kit bag. And it just goes, yep, it's that time of year again.
Febreze does not cut it, FaZe. Trust me. Febreze. Ha! Hockey year laughs at Febreze.
Yeah, it's kind of baked in there.
It's really gross. Now, Jax has a good point. Jared was basically one of those idiots. And that's actually how this all started. He met them while playing hockey and tending bar in BC. He met a lot of those people. That's how he met the guy that plays Derry. That's how he met... I don't know if it was Jonesy or Riley, one of them. One of them actually was an OHL player. I think, is it Riley the blonde one?
Yeah.
It's the blonde one,
Riley's
right?
Riley's the blonde one. I think I looked up, Jonesy was like, he played in Disney's Descendants.
Yes, and he was a model and all this other stuff. And yeah. So Riley had some acting, but he also was an OHL player, so like legit. And Jared Queso is you know, quite the hockey player.
Well, you see him as Shorzy on the ice, and he's just...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He's actually quite skilled.
You know, and a lot of other shows... go ahead, sir.
He played... oh, goodness, I'm blanking out now, and everyone in Canada is going to hate me.
Don Cherry.
Don Cherry, thank you. Yeah, he's played Don Cherry in two biopics.
Oh, really?
That's funny.
That's kind of funny. I will say the, and I don't know if y'all heard this down there, but the Don Cherry episode, we were watching it well after it was made, and it was a little close to Don Cherry's latest kerfuffle, and it was kind of, sorry. Don Cherry's a no-no.
Much about him. I know that every time he's mentioned, the word controversial comes before his name. So
he was a player, I think, for the Bruins for a couple of seasons in the 70s. He then turned into a coach. He was a successful coach. He parlayed that into a very, very long, very successful career in broadcasting as a sports commentator. But he's known for two things, loud suits and loud mouth.
And he likes angry, violent hockey.
He advocates a very selfish, very physical type of hockey playing.
I see.
Especially at the younger levels, you know, where he's saying
the kind that causes concussions. Mm-hmm.
Right, but he's saying that, you know, young players at 5, 6, and 7 don't need to learn the pass. What they need to learn is to be selfish and score goals. So they should work on individual skills, not team skills. So but, you know, he's a coach and he's got this experience. So he has a point. He's just really bad at articulating it because then he just yells and it's nonsense words. And then he does what every old man does when they start ranting. And I can speak from experience. You get lost and then you say something dumb and then you get regret and then you get filled with shame.
And he said something really dumb past year.
He says many, many dumb things and he went over the line and got kicked off the air for it.
Yep. And we're happy for it. And sadly, he's from where we are right now. He was born here.
Yeah. Anyway.
Anyway, moving on.
Holly and Jonesy are super cute.
They are super cute. Their arc is so much fun to watch. And I think one of my favorite arcs of theirs is when they start working out at the gym and there's the two gym bros, two gay guys
who are treating them. Not homophobic.
No. They're treating them like a piece of meat.
The art.
And so they're very uncomfortable when they're alone getting the catcalling. And they're feeling what women often feel.
Yeah, but when they realize that what they're getting from Dax and Ron is what they give to others, then all of a sudden the dynamic changes and shifts. And
I thought they weren't even bummed at getting catcalled. I thought they were looking at this relationship and the patter between the two guys.
Oh, and missing it.
And getting jealous and missing it.
Yeah, that's what I read.
That's
a
good read. I didn't see it that way. I kind of like that read.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But they come to really appreciate the art of the riffing that they're doing.
But they've never been like, ew, leave me alone. No, they're just like, okay.
And then we take Dax and Ron all the way to their wedding. Mm-hmm. And that was a really sweet episode. I thought that was really sweet.
You don't fight at weddings.
And everyone looked very good.
Yes.
Just very pretty.
Mm-hmm.
Chirping, that's the term. Chirping, yes.
Chirping.
If I may,
you may,
talking about other characters, Tannis.
Tannis.
I love Tannis.
Is such a great character, but also, oh my gosh, I want to bite my fist every time she's on screen because, oh, Tannis.
She's pretty hot.
It's a show that has a lot of extremely attractive people, a lot of whom are extremely attractive in vastly different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And she is... definitely one of them.
When she first came on the scene, I was like, wait, but is she actually native? And I looked her up, and oh boy, is she ever. And this was before she started speaking her language on the show, which every time she does, more fist biting.
Mohawk.
Yeah, she's Mohawk.
Yeah, no.
She's from Oka.
She's very Mohawk and from an activist family, and yes. Very, very native, so it's kind of neat.
Mm-hmm.
And voiced a character in Assassin's Creed 3 that they named for her.
Really?
That's cool.
That's awesome.
That's really cool.
I'm a Mohawk character.
Oh, okay, cool.
Oh, and the one set in North America.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That's so cool. I did not know that. Yeah, so she's amazing, and I love how she takes care of her boys. She's auntie. And she takes care of her own boys. And I love it, because she's essentially Wayne in her town.
So I need to talk about the French people for a bit.
Yes, let's talk about the French people. So, as a Frenchman,
as a French
from,
Canadian,
from good old Quebec,
from Quebec, Quebec, Quebec. The thing is,
which We had the subtitles on, and they would spell out the different ways to say in the
K-W-E-E,
subtitles.
Like they would, yeah.
To be so. To be fair.
To be fair.
To be fair.
It's Quebec.
Yeah, it's Quebec.
It's the simple one.
Most Americans say Quebec.
Yes, right. They do.
But it's Quebec, not Quebec or Quebec. There was a video game that came out. Remember the old Wing Commander video game from way back in the day? The same company that when Origins finished that one, they did one about a mercenary F-16 squadron called Strike Commander. It was very much like Wing Commander, but with like real airplanes. And it was, you were going around fighting in mercenary conflicts around the world, set in like a near future sort of a thing. One of the conflicts was a Canadian Civil War, where you had to help the rebels in Quebec. But the thing is, they never bothered to fact check their pronunciation. Oh. So it's the province of Quebec. And my personal favorite, it's that it's the Quebecois people of the Quebecois nation. It's like, I don't know what a Quebecois is. I kind of want to meet one.
The way my family...
Oh, the Quebecois.
My aunts and often will say it is they'll say Quebec. And I'm like, Quebec.
Yeah, you added some letters there. But
yeah, there's no O-I there.
Quebec. But
what I find very annoying is that, especially in, there's different dialects of French Canadian. There's just like there's different accents in English, and that you can go across the country, up, down, left, and right, and find different ways to talk. The same thing in the province of Quebec. You go up, down, left, right, you find at least 83 different ways to pronounce the French and the English. It's natural. It's regional dialects. What really sucks, though, is that in most French Canadian media, and in most media depicting French Canadian people, you only get one dialect. You get the dialect of Quebec City, which is very to the east, and it's very official, bureaucratic, very France French, and with like long drawn out words, and this type of pinched, clipped, half English, you know, where do you work? Oh, I work at the Titi Bank. You know, what, a strip bar? No, the Titi Bank.
Toronto Dominion Bank.
Toronto Dominion Bank, you know, the Titi Bank. That's the way that we talk in my hometown. So, to hear my brand of French on a TV show, and
they
really
went for just over the border, Quebec.
Just over the border. And what I really enjoy is that they actually got French Canadian actors who speak English as a second language.
Mm-hmm.
Like those accents aren't put on. That's them. That's the English that they learned. And I love that.
That's great.
The bilingualism gets involved because Jared speaks French, and he speaks French at like a high school graduate level.
Yeah.
But it is so good where, excusez mes amis, you know, I apologize for my friends. And then he goes on and he does his best. He has a relationship with a French girl, you know, with Marie Fred. They fight the French guys who, for some reason, all wear that same blue and black plaid shirt.
Yeah, I was going to ask, like, is that a thing?
Those are the French guys. But I thought at first, like the first couple of times that I saw it, that it was like a work uniform. Like these guys were like they worked at a mill or they worked at a store or something.
And
and this was like their work uniform. Then they mentioned that they're all bankers.
Yeah.
So you know, I've been to a couple of Toronto Dominion branch locations.
They wear dress shirts.
They
and
don't.
Ties.
They don't wear. That's not the work uniform at TD. I mean, the color's green and white, not blue and black.
I will admit that the style of jacket that they're wearing is what is often referred to as a dinner jacket up here.
The Deep River dinner jacket. Absolutely.
Tongue-in-cheek dinner jacket, you know. You'll have a flannel and it's a wool jacket there. But I think that because they're blue and white, because those are the colors of Quebec, these are the Quebecers. Mm. These are the French guys.
Yeah.
And I think it's just, as soon as you see them, you know who they are. And I think that was the goal.
And it was at the end... At the end of this, at the end of this arc that they do with the French people, I think is when the writing sort of fell off the bus. And this is where I started having problems with the writing, because the relationship that Derry was in and ended, and then the relationship that Wayne was in and how that ended, I felt was just lazy.
Yeah, it was like, okay, we need a reason for them to break up.
It just, it felt so dumb. And, you know, especially the thing with Marie Fred, that she was just what happened really didn't fit into anything of her character that we had seen up to that point. So there was really no reason for it.
The only reason I can justify that is that Wayne is actually the rebound. That because she was supposed to marry the other guy, and the guy she's found kissing is the guy she was supposed to marry.
Yeah, but then you write that in and you show it to us.
Yeah, like no, I agree. But yeah. Maybe we'll find that out in the next season. I don't know.
Unless the point is that they want us to be as surprised as Wayne was.
I do think they did want us to be surprised.
But
then all of a sudden, like, the perfect girl comes back in town.
Yeah,
it's just weird.
Yeah, that's great. Make French people the evil people. That's okay. We're good with that. We're good with being villains.
I think
it's fine. You're not watching the shows anyway.
I think one of the weaknesses of Letterkenny is that they're sort of like, okay, these two characters have some chemistry. We're going to put them in a relationship for about 3 episodes and then break them up for some reason.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's like, definitely that'll
be fun. There doesn't seem to be any progression.
They don't want to break them out of, you know, Wayne and Katie live in the farmhouse and this is how everything is and they all come to the produce stand. Like, they want to stick to that, but if they start putting them in relationships, it doesn't make sense for them to remain in that holding pattern. And I mm-hmm. think that's where they're getting stuck. I'm not saying that it's okay. I'm just saying that that might be it. Jack says, I do feel like they have gotten a little lazy with the writing in the more recent seasons, but this requires a larger soapbox than I want to go on in chat. Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
And that is a failing of when a show becomes super successful, it's how do I change the formula without killing the show? And sometimes by not changing the formula, you kill the show. So you have to decide, either are we going to end it or are we going to write something really good?
Yeah, because it either completely changes and becomes something that it wasn't originally or it gets stale.
Yeah.
And both of those are bad.
And we've seen both of those in Trailer Park Boys.
Yeah.
Like, they've gotten stale and they reinvented.
Yeah. Okay. And, you know, sometimes, you know, you have to look at things like Fawlty Towers.
Yeah.
The reason why it only got one season, because John Cleese didn't want that to happen. He'd written 6 good episodes, and he just left it at that. You know, same thing with Chappelle Show. Why did that whole thing end when it did? Because there was a giant fear of it going stale, and he lost it.
Yeah, I respect shows and writers that say, I've done what I wanted to do with this. I could keep doing it and probably make a lot of money out of it. But I've told the story I want to tell, and I'm done.
Yeah, Gravity Falls, The Good Place.
Yeah.
Like, those are two really good shows that just ended on a strong note and didn't try to keep milking the cow that are all named Cow.
Yeah, exactly. And yes, we're getting from the chat, and so we'll probably get it in email. Yes, there are 2 seasons of Fawlty Towers with 12 episodes in total. Whatever. Point still stands. There was an end in mind.
Yes, Jax. Looking at you, Supernatural.
Yes, looking at you, Supernatural. Exactly. There was an end. There were many ends, and
Castle.
Castle was on.
Yeah, Castle went on. Once they did that clip show, I was out. I was outy. But yeah, you know, give us an end and make it great. And I think Letterkenny is at that point that they need to figure out what are they doing.
See, I think putting in, and I hate to say it because I like the show, but put in one final season to get them all at a good, like, stopping place. So maybe we need to talk about what are our, like, ideal end place headcanons
before
for the
we
characters.
Go there. There's one character we didn't talk about that I do want to talk about. Squirrely Dan, exactly.
So good.
So apparently he was originally supposed to be the guy that plays McMurray, who I believe his name is actually Dan.
Yeah.
But then the guy that plays Squirrely Dan is a comedian, and that's his shtick. Like, when he does that comedy, that's kind of his regular shtick. And he was a fan of the YouTube series, because this started out on YouTube. Mm-hmm. He was a fan of the YouTube series, and when he heard, he was like, "I, you gotta let me audition." And they're like, well, we got to have this guy on here. This is awesome. And they just recreated the character and rewrote it and then wrote McMurray's character as something completely different. And, which is kind of funny. Apparently, McMurray is completely, the actor is completely shy and not that type of person and would never say those things.
You can't have that kind of character.
Yeah.
Without, It can't be honest, you know. Yeah. It has to be exactly. Somebody putting on that type of character. Just like the guy that played Biff Tannen,
yeah,
in the Back to the Future movies is like the nicest guy on the planet and like a Christian rock star.
So according to the by the way, the commentary tracks, it's Letterkenny the Furtifiles.
Okay.
So you can hear the commentary and
Darn, now we're going to have to watch the whole series over again.
Oh no.
Where will we find the time?
No.
So they were saying that, you know, he's like all quiet and everything and you hit action and he's McMurray, which is great. But Squirrely Dan is so great. I love the, that's what I appreciates about you.
Oh, that's what you appreciate about.
Calls her Miss Katie.
Yes, Miss Katie. Yes, Katie. Yes. Which,
but I do love that one thing where he's like, you know what? I gotta say it. Wayne, your sister's hot, and then he runs away.
Too fat to run.
Halfway down the
field. I regret nothing.
Allegedly.
I love where he gets uncomfortable when they start going into certain topics, and he'll bring up his women's studies professor, Trisha, and I love that he's taking women's studies, but he's like, I'm getting really uncomfortable with this talk. And I love it because, you know, we're always saying that's what's needed. You know, when it's just locker room talk and boys will be boys, we need someone in that situation to speak up and say, okay, but it's not appropriate, even if that person's not here. And Dan does that.
That the scene, especially with McMurray, where, you know, oh, where I come from, one time it's just kind of ridiculous to just call it games. We know where you came from.
Yeah.
It's just not appropriate.
I love that. We know where you came from. It's still not appropriate. Times change. We got to change with the times.
Yes.
Oh, the Nazi punching other.
Dan is the. So
this conversation is fast becoming a confrontation.
One of the surreal things about the show for us, and I think we mentioned when we came to visit y'all, then we had said that as we were driving there in sort of rural Ontario to get to y'all, that so many places felt very, very familiar. Like the farm, sort of redneck area culture of the South where we grew up and have always called home, it seemed very much in place there as well. And so in a lot of Letterkenny, we're seeing that. We're like the same styles of redneckery. Dan, as your big farm boy, is probably the most familiar character. Although there's, there's a lot in even like Wayne, just, you know, the good old boys that you never really mess with, real straight shooters and hard workers. I mean, there's a lot of commonality between the redneck culture of our area and the Letterkenny culture. But Dan especially, I think, is very familiar.
Yep.
Think, if you think back a little bit and put your history class hat on, when the English came to this continent and there was French people here, they sort of split the French in half and sent a bunch up north and sent the others down south. That's why you've got Acadians to the north and Cajuns to the south. But it's the same group of people. So the fact that the southern United States looks a lot like northern Ontario and northern Quebec, there's reasons for that. It's the same culture of people that got split in half and brought their influences to two different areas. That's why a lot of the cooking down south resembles a lot of the cooking up north, just with different ingredients, because you can't get crawdads up north.
That's a shame.
And, of course, mixing with the people from the Caribbean and people.
Right. Yeah. So, there's many different, and, you know, up north, you start getting into things like Shack, and then you get a bunch of other, you know, mixing with the other groups, and, you know, you get Métis culture when they start mixing with the First Nations peoples. Things that didn't happen down south or happened in different ways. So you get two different cultures, but they have the same roots, so they start to resemble each other. In a lot of ways. The other thing I want to mention about Squirrely Dan is that weird thing he does where he pluralizes everything that he says.
What is that?
My dad does it.
Yeah.
Really?
But my dad does it only with certain words, usually with people's names. And I don't know if it's a... Because my dad is very French Canadian, so I don't know if it's a language thing, whatever. Especially, my dad has a friend named Collins. I'm like, no, Dad, his name's Colin. No, no, it's, you know, Collins, guy with the beard. I go, I know Colin. There's only one of him. But it's a thing.
We're
just not, you know, Squirrely Dan is putting it on for comedic effect, where he pluralizes every word in a sentence. But no, that's a thing.
But not sushis.
Not sushis.
Not sushis and not sashimis.
I don't think those words need an S's.
I don't know. Maybe it's sort of like how people around here, like, I'm going to go to the Walmart, or I'm going to go to the...
Or
so on and so forth.
Whatever store it is, add an apostrophe S, as though Mr. Kroger is the one what owns Kroger's.
So we're going to go to Kroger's. We're going to go to Dollar General's.
Dollar General.
The crystals.
No, there is
there's
a
no
Dollar
S.
General every 5 minutes around here.
We talked about how the small towns are very familiar, but there are certain things in this show that I think are indicative of all small towns. And I'm going to step out of this conversation right now because I am not from a small town.
You are from a big town.
I'm from a very big town.
Very big town.
I have lived in small town Nova Scotia. I have lived in slightly small town New Brunswick, and then I was introduced to what a real small town is by our good friend the Encaffeinated One with a population of 285 people.
Ooh.
That was interesting and really nice, and we would spend some vacation time there. It was very nice. But go ahead, talk about like the little pieces of small town.
I think, first off, the sort of almost claustrophobic nature of everyone knows everyone else.
That's why bad gas travels fast.
Mm-hmm.
But through the years, like everyone not only knows everyone else, but everyone has history with everyone else. So when you had like the big time hockey players, the Bays, coming into town and they're Stewart's cousin. And so like everyone just has this history there. So, you know, everyone knows everything about everyone else.
The egg hall meetings that no one needs because everyone knows what needs to be done, but it's just there because McMurray's making them do it because he wants to hear himself talk. And everyone knows it, and everybody just sits there bored the whole meeting because they know.
Yeah.
But everybody knows what's going on. Well, I suggest that we do a motion to move the coat hangers from the front hallway to the back hallway. We've all been in those meetings.
Yep.
Also, I actually went to high school at a line county. It was one county on one side of the street and one county on the other side of the street. One side was wet and one side was dry. So the people from Monroe County went to Nettleton because that's where you could buy the liquor, but only on one side of the street. And the liquor store was the only business on the street called Short Street. So if you drove down there, you either took the wrong turn or everyone knows why you went there. But it was also the place where people would cook many other drugs.
Mm.
So yeah, the skids, distributing drugs.
Hanging outside the Dollar Tree, the dollar store, whatever.
The drinking age in Ontario is 19. Mm.
Yeah.
The drinking age in the province of Quebec is 18. I used to live on a town that was on the border. The border, the border was a
Happy
river.
18th birthday.
The river, the river was the border, and there was a small, like, 2-lane bridge that went across. And directly on the other side of the bridge was a French convenience store, a dépanneur that sold beer. It also had a bar attached to it. And every Friday, every high schooler from the Ontario side suddenly became Quebecois for the night, went to the other side of the bridge and just partied their faces off because you can do it over there. You just can't bring it home.
Yep.
The other element that I think is really familiar to small town people is that even people in that town that can't stand each other, that are just on each other all the time, if outsiders, if somebody's in trouble or somebody's coming after them, then the whole town's like, No, you don't get to do that.
Yeah, we
get to beat
up
the skids.
Yeah.
We smack them around. You don't smack them around.
Yeah.
I think that also is a like, so I'm from a big family, and I think this is true of most families. I can make fun of my sister and complain about her, but the moment you do, I'm going to fight you. And I think the small towns are like just extended families.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and they may actually literally be extended families, as we discovered in that very small town that we used to visit.
Yeah.
And part of what you were talking about, knowing everything about everybody, what really gets confusing about that is when people grow up and get respectable professions, and you're like, no, that guy can't work in the doctor's office. I saw him one time doing X crazy.
Or when you see the people you graduated from high school with having children, and you're like, Lord, oh, no. Help.
They're raising children.
Bless their hearts.
Help us.
I remember going back to my little town up north and seeing what hath become of the kings of cool and queens of school. You know, the people for whom the 4 years of high school was the most important and most successful time of their lives. The people that we all looked up at and were like, well, they're so awesome. Stuck at a dead-end job at Foot Locker because he got his girlfriend pregnant at 17 and couldn't go to college because he had to put food on the table. Ha ha! Where are you now, buds? And where am I? Woohoo!
Ouch.
My mom always said, wait until your 30th or 20th or something high school reunion. Because by then, you've gotten old enough to where you don't care anymore. Every imagined hurt, every embarrassment, it's just become ridiculous. And most of you have raised kids anyway by then.
I will say at my 10-year, I only went to my 10-year, but at my 10-year, everybody just looks so old. And I realized, oh, they had kids.
What were you going to say, babe?
Well, that's another aspect is the enshrinement of athletes. So, yeah, hockey there, football here. But, that's the thing that everybody in town talks about and the privileges that come with being an athlete.
Yeah.
I think that's a familiar trope.
So there are a couple of, like, Canadianisms. And I'm curious, is there anything that you felt lost on culture-wise from this show?
I mean, we looked up some of the stuff.
The hockey talk.
All of the hockey talk, of course. It took us a little bit to figure out, and again, this isn't necessarily just a Canadian thing, but just proximity to places where First Peoples live. But the relationship between Letterkenny and the Rez.
And
it took us a little bit to figure out that a cigarette was a dart.
And it took a little while to figure out why Tanis was wanting to sell Letterkenny.
Like, oh, okay, duty free cigarettes. I get it.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
It's towns that have reserves nearby always have interesting relationships, and let's say complicated relationships, because there's always there's always a lot of issues, especially when it comes to things like the duty free cigarettes, and especially when you start throwing in things like provincial borders where. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Legal ages change always leads to all kinds of complicated nuances, which I thought they handled pretty good in this show. They did it without controversy.
Yeah.
And that's kind of why this show is so smart.
I think one of the reasons that they did it so well is that they hired actual First Nations people. And all of their actors have like input on what they're writing and what they're doing, so they listened to the people that they were trying to represent, which you'd think should be a no-brainer.
I love something as simple and stupid as letting them speak their own language.
Oh my gosh, it's so great
when Tanis and the cousins there are speaking Mohawk.
Yeah.
That's a nice touch. I like that.
We haven't had TV signal since 2011. And when we moved here, we got fiber. And with fiber came, digital.
Responsibility.
It came great responsibility. No, it came like this digital package that gave us access to the Bell, streaming, TV app, which meant that we could watch some live TV. But we can watch live TV from all over Canada, including all the way north into various populations. So there are some TV shows that are in
Nunavut.
Yeah, what's their language?
Inuk.
That are in Inuk. And you can see it's written in Inuk and then in English, and then they're speaking Inuk. And I was like, this is so cool. I was so excited. So to see some of that representation for, you know, different clans.
What I really like is that
Letterkenny was awesome.
Is that Hockey Night in Canada is broadcast in three languages: French, English, and Punjabi.
Nice.
And you can find the Maple Leaf Games broadcast because there is a massive, massive Punjabi audience in Canada that wants to learn about the sport. So they actually have a, for the local games in Toronto, they have a Punjabi broadcasting team that does the play-by-play and the color commentary and everything of the games live. I think it's the most Canadian thing ever.
It's
I think it's so awesome.
Canadian. It's just so Canadian. There's so many things that, like Canada really does extend to try to get many languages and to let people understand. So I do want to give props to Letterkenny for, you know, again, listening to the people that they're trying to represent. And I think that they did that well. Now, I have a question. Was there any bagged milk in this? I can't remember.
No.
I don't remember any bagged milk.
I'm trying to remember. Yeah. I know that there were certain things that when Tech and I were watching, we'd look over at each other and we're like, sport's not going to get that. Sport's not going to get that.
your brother's sport.
My brother,
Occasionally they would hang a lantern on it talking about the everything chips and the ketchup
All
chips.
Dressed.
Yeah.
All dressed, yeah. And
what the Yanks would do, which I always like have a moment with that, because if you call anyone around here a Yankee, then you're not going to have a good time of it.
Don't call people in Alabama Yankees.
But what did you guys think of that episode where, or the series of episodes where they went to the States and they met the American?
I mean,
I'm kind of happy about the very last episode ending because, boy, was that inevitable.
Yeah, I mean,
I was like, Katie, what were you thinking?
It was a takedown of a very specific type.
Yes.
And yeah, we're there with it.
I think I like the cousin a little more who, like, dresses in all American colors and is just ridiculous, but funny.
Yeah. So again, you know, it's a show that, you know, it can poke fun at cultural stereotypes and stuff. The whole thing pokes fun at Canadian cultural stereotypes more than anything else. I thought that they're Yankee jokes were quite funny.
Well, that's a thing I think that we've inherited from our British forefathers is this very introspective sense of humor where I will make fun of me and I will make fun of me better than you can.
Yeah.
And, you know, tongue planted firmly in cheek and everything. It's like what you think. Look at the it was the closing ceremony of the 2010 Olympic Games where all of a sudden it's polar bears and Mounties with igloos everywhere, and Michael J. Fox comes out to give a speech. And so, you think we're nothing but maple syrup and polar bears? Well, let's give you what you think we are, then. And
look, my beaver over here is going to be very upset at you if you keep making fun.
But Letterkenny was absolutely right. Gravy on fries makes perfect sense, and I don't understand why. And malt vinegar is a fine thing to have on the table.
Well, no, they're wrong. It's supposed to be white vinegar.
The further south you go, the more malt vinegar you'll start to see. The further north you go, the more it's only white vinegar.
With fried fish, I really like malt vinegar.
I don't put vinegar on my fish.
That's what the lemon's for.
Tech does.
Of course, now down here, it would be pepper sauce, which is a jar full of peppers, and then you put the vinegar in it, and you wait. And then when the vinegar is fully infused with the pepper, then...
Ooh, that's just hot sauce.
We call hot sauce, like Tabasco sauce would be called a hot sauce. Mm-hmm. Okay. But then pepper-infused vinegar would be a pepper sauce. Mm-hmm.
I must try this pepper sauce.
Yeah. Send us a bottle, please.
It's easy to make.
Take peppers, jar, add vinegar.
Gotcha.
But do you make it with white vinegar or malt vinegar?
I think you just put white vinegar.
Okay. So up here, people put white vinegar on their fries or chips. And if you think about it, it's like salt and vinegar chips, right? What Americans would call chips. But me, I don't like it because it makes the fries soggy.
Gotta watch your ratios.
Tell me about maple infused whiskey.
That is.
What was it called? They were drinking the sortilège.
Yes.
Sortilège. Sortilège is a massive, successful French-Canadian business. And yeah, maple syrup-infused whiskey. It's just as good as you think it is.
Can you go ahead and spell that for me?
S-O-R-T-I-L-E-G-E. Sortilège.
S-O-R-T-I-L-E-G-E.
I think there's an accent.
Sortilège. Yeah. Got it. Okay.
There's an accent on the first E. I think it's
sortilège.
Either sortilège.
Lège.
But I pronounce it wrong because I'm from Northern Quebec, so I say sortilège. But that's just what we do. We smash words together, we take out syllables, we add extra vowels, and adds the S's.
You were talking about earlier, and I've started to wonder now, if someone from like the most Cajun-y parts of Louisiana and somebody from the most French parts of Quebec got together and tried to speak French to each other, could they converse?
I think if they slowed down.
Yeah.
But I think a bayou dweller at full chat and a guy from North Shore, New Brunswick, you know, pure Acadie at full toothless banter, I don't think they could understand each other. But if they slowed down, they're speaking the same language.
Well, I mean, like, you've had interactions with some people from Haiti, and when they talk real fast, you're like, I have no idea what they're saying.
And they can't understand me either.
But if you each slow down, you can kind of meet.
The hardest of all the accents that I've had to deal with are the guys from West Africa, like Côte d'Ivoire, and those countries, when they're speaking African French. They just add more vowels. It's just all vowel sounds and really fast.
And I think, like, for instance, like those deep Louisiana, like, they're speaking English, but you can't understand what they're saying. If they slowed down, we'd be able to understand their English better.
Like Farmer Fran from Waterboy.
Or Boomhauer.
Boomhauer.
Yeah.
See, I can almost understand Boomhauer.
We can understand Boomhauer. Yeah.
Well, you're
and
closer.
It's interesting you bring that up because I feel like in tone, King of the Hill is probably one of the closest parallels to Letterkenny.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think the writing is quite as clever, but sometimes Letterkenny gets clever for the sake of being clever with its wordplay. Mm. I love that. Mm. I can get that it can get annoying for some people. I think Letterkenny has smarter writing, but in terms of how it treats small town culture and the everyday problems of the people that live there and does it in a very gentle way that insiders and outsiders can appreciate, I feel like they have that in common.
I agree. And I think King of the Hill is a great show.
Yeah, the love and respect that they show each other in that show, that even though they're being problematic, I mean, Dale Gribble and his wife, who has to get massages for her headaches.
John Redcorn
and his son, and the fact that they, you know, they still don't tell Dale.
Everybody knows but Dale.
And Peggy's Spanish is a lot like Wayne's French.
Yeah, except Peggy thinks she's good, which is different.
Imperfect Spanish. Explain.
Say it in her own Spanish words.
Oh, yeah.
This is not about Letterkenny, but since we brought up King of the Hill, I have a theory. And my theory is...
that it's a demon.
Not that it's a demon. My theory is that when these cartoons that are written for the adult audience, when they come out, the first one you put out is all right. And then the second one is genius. And it is true for Mike Judge, Beavis and Butthead. Okay, that was fun. Daria. That was really good. And then King of the Hill was next level.
Simpsons, Futurama.
And now Disenchantment. Family Guy, American Dad was much better. Much, much better. I always say Family Guy, like, maybe 20% might be funny and 80% is problematic. Whereas American Dad, it's more like 80% is funny and 20% is problematic.
I got a little disenchanted by Seth MacFarlane and his let's say controversial things to be funny.
Yeah,
thing.
Yeah. That's all Family Guy. That is all it's Family Guy.
It's another example of what I was mentioning the other day that I grew up and the TV show didn't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's one of the things that I like about Letterkenny, bringing it back, is that it was growing up. I appreciate about it that it is growing up.
My golly gee willikers.
We did want to talk about what do we want to see for our characters. In the final season, what do we want to
see? I was saying this earlier. I really want Stuart to clean up his act at least a good bit. I want him to pursue his DJing, and once he has his life, once he has sorted himself out, I think he and Katie maybe have a future.
Huh? All right.
I like them together.
I think once he moves out of the basement, everything will change. Yeah. It's probably, you know what? It's probably a sunlight deficiency is what's causing it. Once he
sunlight deficiency mixed with arrested development. You know, I mean, he is stuck in that, like, I'm out of high school, so I'm kind of an adult, but I still live in my mom's basement, so I've not yet had a chance to become an adult.
Yeah.
Which is common.
I think in this past season, he sort of worked on that. He said, I'm tired of everyone helping me with my problems.
Yep.
I want to do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Although I do like him and Gay together.
Yeah, that's true.
Really
for the longest time, I didn't know how old Gay was, so I didn't know if it was inappropriate or not. And then we figured out that she was an adult because she comes in and it's like, my parents sent me here. And I'm like, wait, so does that mean that you're a minor? Like, what's going on?
I felt like she was in her 20s.
Yeah.
But like her family was rich. So like this was sort of rich brat rebelling.
I really liked, by the way, the storyline with them where they're in the city. And they're mixing drugs. But the thing is, it's like
ethical drug dealing.
Yeah, there's like there's somebody else mixing drugs where they're putting drugs in girls' drinks. So they're mixing drugs that girls can put in their own drinks or something like that, you know. And they're giving, it's all about, you know, making sure that girls aren't getting roofied.
Oh, it's because they were, their drug had color to it. So that when it was added to the drink would change color so you would know.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
So that you could only take the drugs consensually.
Right.
And not be drugged.
And I love that. I think that that's so cool that it was, no, we're saving lives. We're doing good with our drug dealing.
And it really fits sort of their anarchy, but I don't know. So what would be the spectrum there? Like chaotic good?
Yes. Yes, they're definitely chaotic good. I do like that consent and autonomy is a running theme throughout the entire show, but they're not hitting you over the head with it. It's just there like it should be.
Yeah.
There's no like, let me get this girl drunk, like in How I Met Your Mother. Okay, that's disgusting.
Okay, so more headcanon finishers for the stories.
Yes, where do you want to go?
So Bonnie kicks the crap out of her older brother for being a skeevy dirtbag, which then leads to his divorce from Mrs. McMurray. Mm-hmm. Mrs. McMurray, being a ginned-out wino, has nothing else to do with her life, and she starts 12-stepping, and through that becomes a member of Pastor Glenn's church.
Oh my God, that's amazing! I love this.
And then she becomes the like hyper religious former drinker
who's there to save everyone's soul.
Who's there? Yeah, right. And she becomes a church lady.
And she also leads the AA meetings and does so by like giving the same kind of pep talks that she would have given to her husband. Like, you can do this, baby. You can do this.
I'm just imagining that these AA meetings are being held in the Ag Hall.
No, there was no other place for them to hold this, so it's at Modine's.
Oh, God.
That's actually something I worry about, is everyone in Letterkenny's livers are just going to explode. just, there they go.
I would like to see Katie do something. I don't know what she wants to do with her life, and I want whatever it is to happen. You know, she thought about modeling for a little while, but I want to see Katie, like, become in charge of something. I want to see her have a position.
She can run Stuart's DJing career. She can take care of the financials.
Manager.
Yes, yes.
I mean, she did sort of do that with the TV show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
She's got it.
The radio
show. Experience.
Oh, no, it was
the
TV show.
The TV show. I could actually see her being, like, a producer. Yeah, absolutely. Angela? Did you have one?
I kind of would really like to see Bonnie and Derry get together.
Mm-hmm.
Just because
that'd be sweet.
Like, she needs to get over her fixation on Wayne because Wayne is just not into her.
Hi, Wayne.
Like, and like, I think that they sort of have similar levels of fixation on the objects of their attraction. So I think they would become a couple that would be like really, really super into each other.
I think so.
Like a less creepy version of the McMurrays.
Yeah. I do want to throw one little shout out to the Halloween special where Bonnie comes out in like these stereotypical, like, sexy costumes, and then there's always a good explanation. And I think my favorite is when she comes out
referee the charity softball game there.
She comes out in the Indian costume and Tannis is like, oh, and it's like, you're going down to that demonstration and it's an example of how not to what cultural appropriation is, aren't you? Of course I am.
But when that happened, Angela was like, no, they're not going to. And I was like, no, we got to trust it.
Because they've explained every other one.
I couldn't figure out what the turnaround was going to be, but I figured it was coming. And yeah, that's the one reason. One reason where that's okay.
I thought that was hysterical.
It's really good.
All right.
I also want to see Riley and Jonesy coaching again. I think they did a good job of coaching.
I love how they go from like barely playing and slacking off to trying to get their team to do better. So like bringing their team together in questionable ways, bringing their team together. And then it goes to, okay, now you're going to coach a women's team. And then it goes to like this whole other thing. But I like that there's a progression there. And I really want to see them being the coaches.
I love that the girls' team is exactly the same as the guys' team, which I think was the point, the point of the gag.
Yeah.
But that, you know, hockey's hockey. Locker room banter is locker room banter.
Yep.
Everything
between
else.
Two very hot women.
Yeah. Although the extras on the women's team cracked every single
time. Yeah.
They could not keep a straight face.
But the women's team were so funny.
I think there's one. I think it's the goalie. She's a brunette at the back, but she cannot keep it straight. Right. She's cracking every time.
And the thing that I thought was really funny is like when they're trying to help the men's team, they're all fighting because of and I'm doing the air quotes, a snipe.
Snipe.
They're all fighting over one girl, and then when it's the women's team, it's the two women are fighting over one guy, and they're both, in both cases, the guys are fighting over Angie, who's not worth it, and the guy that the women are fighting over is Shorzy, who's not worth it. And it's so funny because I love that it's similar things happen. So
Shorzy's so good.
Shorzy's awful. F you, Shorzy.
Anything?
No, you can't.
That Shorzy says.
No quoting Shorzy.
Giving an explicit tag.
Oh, I got one.
Yes,
which gets old real fast. Just saying. So,
did they low key confirm that Shorzy actually did have a relationship with their mom?
It seems like they did.
Where's your friend Shorzy?
Yeah.
The term you're looking for, Jax, is Puck Bunny.
Yep, Puck Bunny, that's it.
Puck Bunnies. Now, the one character that I have to badly imitate and badly quote very quickly, because we haven't mentioned him at all yet, because we haven't mentioned it, it's freaking embarrassing.
Freaking embarrassing.
I wish I could kick something right now.
He didn't say freaking. No, do not kick over the garbage can. It is full.
The coach is so good.
He's
they
pretty much every
really
hockey coach.
Weird with his character too.
Yeah, some of the stuff with Barb gets a little dark.
My dead wife, Barb. I highly recommend you check out the bloopers on YouTube for the Valentine's.
Watch it.
Because every time he's like, I think I'm cheating on Barb, and everyone's just like laughing, and he's crying, and everyone just starts laughing.
Have y'all seen a lot of Homestar Runner?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. A lot of times Letterkenny reminds me of Homestar Runner. Like, especially like the holiday episodes where they get into a gimmick and repeat the same thing.
Yeah.
I could just almost hear the in the background there.
So, you know, this is a great show. If you've listened to all, like, what are we doing? An hour and 45 minutes of us rambling about this great show, and you still haven't seen it, go watch it. Because really, we haven't spoiled
it. You could have watched four episodes in the time. Yeah. You'd be two-thirds of the way through a season
exactly.
in the time that you've spent listening to this.
They're short seasons. What are they like?
Six episodes.
Six episodes and something sometimes like that,
sometimes seven with the holiday special.
Yeah.
And they're on Hulu in the U.S. They're on Crave in Canada. Sadly, it seems like they're nowhere in the U.K. You might want to ask your uncle about that.
Daily Motion.
It's worth watching. It's a lot of fun. And it's kind of nice to have something like this because, as I said, we've had FUBAR, we had I think it's actually Trailer Park Boys, then FUBAR. But both of those were, FUBAR, I felt, was punching down. Trailer Park Boys was like punching sideways. This, I think, is punching up. And it's just kind of nice to have some positive representation out there. And it's just, it's feel good. You feel good when you finish watching it.
But this making fun of ourselves thing isn't new. Like, I'm going to go back even well before Trailer Park Boys. I'm going to go way back.
SCTV?
Moranis.
Yeah.
John Candy.
The Great White North.
Yes. Well, the reason why everyone thinks the Canadian accent is Bob and Doug McKenzie is because of Bob and Doug McKenzie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually, you know what
Is
else?
Is Levy with that?
Yes.
Yep.
Yes. I will actually put Red Green in the same genre as Letterkenny.
Because
it's a small town. It's good old boys.
Yeah.
Heath and Angela are clueless about Red Green.
Yeah.
So there's there was a comic by the name of Steve Smith.
Red versus Blue?
No, Red versus Blue.
Also funny. Steve Smith had a skit comedy show with his wife called Smith and Smith in the 1970s. And in the late 80s, early 90s, he started this thing called the Red Green Show, which was about a guy, a man's man, who ran a lodge, the Possum Lodge, where, you know, phrases like, if the women don't find you handsome, they should at least find you handy. So every episode, he would do a fix-it thing where he would show you how to, you know, make a boat out of duct tape or how to turn your car into a convertible using only duct tape. Or it was duct tape everything.
That's another Southern.
It was ridiculous.
Jack's nose.
Yep.
So it's a celebration of Bricker Lodge. Find it and use it and
It was very silly. He had little poems. You guys will appreciate this. He used to read little poems out in the interstitials between the commercial breaks, and it was called the segment was called This is the Winter of Our Discount Tent.
Yes.
And one of them, it is a winter's day. I am shoveling my driveway. The snowplow driver fills my driveway again with snow as he drives by. He waves a wintry wave, and I wave back with one finger.
Jack says, the man's prayer, I'm a man, and I can change.
If I have to. I guess. Absolutely.
Yeah, so this is a great show. Are we going to rate it?
Well, I think the best way to describe it is we usually take like a couple months to finish a series. We took a couple weeks.
We were watching two or three episodes a day. And
yep.
Yeah.
That's what we did.
Yeah.
I think we mainlined an entire season once.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. I think we just watched a whole season one weekend.
We'd watch one for breakfast, one for lunch, and one right before bed.
Absolutely. That says something about the show. You know what? My rating will change.
Mm-hmm.
My rating will change depending on when this show ends.
Mm.
If we come up with a conclusion and we end it, let's say within the next season or two.
Yeah.
I think that's about the life the show has left.
Yeah.
If I hear the news that Crave re-signed them for another six seasons.
It's worrisome.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is worrisome.
Yeah.
Yeah. And well, and the other good thing that would
10
be,
out of 10. Only 10 seasons.
Yes. The other good thing that that would do if they did end in season 9, season 10, is they brought on a lot of, I won't say like complete newcomers but or unknowns, but people that don't have a lot of acting credits that have now made a name for themselves and earned some chops, and I would love to see them spread out and do more
absolutely.
stuff.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree.
Every single one of those actors on that show I could see in their own show. Maybe right. not with that character, but...
Well, by the way,
why isn't Roald on a sitcom yet?
I know. He's so good. He's so good. Gail, we didn't really talk about Gail.
Oh, yeah, we didn't.
She's a serious actress that has done a lot of theater. And I was watching Anne with an E, and I realized that one of the characters was the same was Gail. And I was like,
really?
Oh my gosh, I can't believe it. Yeah. And she was amazing. And it was exactly what Jared Kisso had said in the Furter edition was, he'd never seen, you know, she was so serious. How could she do comedy? And then she came in all that stuff that she does, she came up with. And it's out there. And he's like, it just works. Heath, you do that way too well. He's being Gail right now.
she just a weird snake.
She undulates.
She undulates, yes.
Everything.
Hey, Wayne.
Have you ever...
What are you doing today, Wayne?
Have you guys seen... a Harry Potter musical, Starkid, Potter putting together a, yes, I know,
like,
you've seen it, Elfie.
I want to talk about this.
but it was these college kids who put together a Harry Potter musical, sort of a comedic retelling.
And that's where Darren Criss from Glee and whatnot got his start.
Yeah, but... The girl who plays Draco Malfoy on that series is very much like that, in that she just throws her body around in the most ridiculous ways that has nothing to do with the scene. And it's just tantalizing to watch.
That's fantastic.
The scene where she was trying to get Stormy trying to get a stud for Stormy, and she just like runs full tilt down the road and like takes a skidding halt.
She's so physical. It's great. It's great. So, so I agree. Okay. I would love to see those actors in other things. I want them to be free to take other jobs, and I want. I don't know. It's not really Hollywood. I want like Toronto and Vancouver to be knocking down their doors. Although we do know that, you know, the actor for Riley has gone to LA and acted
LA.
By the way, when they say the city, that is always Toronto, right?
I believe not always. Anyway, go Tech.
The city is... the one that's over there.
Yeah, whatever you're closest to.
This fictional town of Letterkenny is on the outskirts of a major city. But it doesn't have to be Toronto. It doesn't even have to be anywhere near that big. The city could be a town of 50,000 people.
Okay.
But it's the one that Toronto's 3 million.
And it's about 2 hours away from the town where Jared Kisso grew up. So that was my assumption. The city was code for Toronto.
Right. But
it could be a smaller city.
But when they
closer.
Go to the city, it looks like they're in like Scarborough. So they're not even.
I think they film in Sudbury.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
So city, Sudbury is about 250,000 people.
Yeah.
But the thing is that the city is that one where you do your shopping. It's the one that's nearby.
Keith and Angela are just lost. We're saying town names and they're like, sure.
No, it's like Tupelo for us.
Yeah.
So if you think of where, when you guys came to visit us, where we were, where they're filming is another 4 hours north.
I will say that when we lived in New Brunswick, we lived outside of Fredericton, and Fredericton is not a big city.
80,000 like, people.
At all. But like, to me, it's just suburbia. And,
we all don't come from cities of 13 million people, Nutty.
Okay, but it was like not even Garden City. It was like, I don't know. Yeah. Like, I don't know. I can't even compare it.
There are three tiers of town.
Yeah.
There are three tiers to how big your city's getting. So tier one, when it gets a Walmart, when it reaches Walmart status, it's of a certain size. Next one is Home Depot, and the last one's a Costco. If your town's big enough to get a Costco, it's a pretty big city.
It's a pretty big city. Yeah, that, then it's a city. And
there's Whole Foods. There's something.
Yeah, we don't have that.
Yeah. Ready for a Whole Foods.
So we lived like 10, 15, maybe 20 minutes outside of Fredericton. And there were people that I would talk to who would call for, oh, I don't like going into all the way into the city.
Gotcha. Okay.
It's 15 minutes in the car, and that's not even a city. Like, I know it's the capital, but it's not even a city. Like, it's...
Oh, the traffic is so bad in this city. It's a town of 80,000 people with two bridges and 15 minutes of rush hour. That's not traffic. You haven't had time.
And I don't mean to belittle anyone, but that I'm not belittling. I'm not making fun of. It's just a different reaction when you move from place to place.
Yeah.
That is, it becomes whatever the local parlance is. So whatever the biggest town is the city.
Gotcha.
And, you know, when we lived in Nova Scotia, I don't think I ever heard anybody call like New Minas or Wolfville the city, but I wouldn't be surprised if we went a little more rural, if they would. For us, when we were there, we were like, okay, so the city is Halifax.
Which is an hour and a half away.
Which is an actual city. Yeah. Right.
You know, you're not stuck in traffic until you have enough time to, while not rushed, get out of your car and put your coat in the trunk.
Yeah.
And then get back in. Anything with less time than that is not real stopped in traffic.
But some people think, you know, like that 10 minutes that you're slow on the one road out is traffic. So that's fine. So we liked this show. We hope you liked this show. Heath, Angela, where can people find you on the internets?
Well, we don't really do the Red Dwarf intro cast much these days, but
you can find us there.
You can find us there. And since Red Dwarf is now dropping the special, then that's going to happen. We are going to cover that eventually. Anywhere else on the interwebs.
And they can get there by going to?
The Red Dwarf intro cast.
Google that.
Yeah, there we go.
Wow.
We haven't done it in a while.
It's been a minute. I am so ashamed. Okay, there we go.
I'm not even going to help them.
You're not.
I'm not.
The Red Dwarf intro cast .wordpress.com.
There you go. Yes. And they've got some fetching album art, and we'll just saying.
We do.
And you will hear all of our contact information in the outro. But please, if you've seen Letterkenny, tell us what you think. Send us your favorite quote. Or if you haven't seen it yet, check it out and then send us your thoughts. Thank you so much for joining us. I do want to thank our patrons real fast before we go.
Yay, those guys.
Because without the patrons, we would not be putting out two episodes a month, and we would not be able to take this deep delve into Letterkenny. Patrons.
And that's what I appreciate about your patrons.
That's what I appreciate about my patrons. What I appreciate about my patrons is that they, you know, they help me pay for my server costs. And, you know, in order to show my appreciation, I am able to, you know, thank them on the air. And if they are patrons on patreon.com, they can get episodes early. They get special downloads, including currently there is some Rory wallpaper for your phone. And at the $5 tier, you get an original piece of art every year that you get to choose.
Except for the ones that I call dibs on.
Shush, shush. And then at the $10 level, you get a limited edition t-shirt that we put out every year. And even if you are just giving $1, you can buy that t-shirt at cost. And it is only available for that year. So I do want to thank... Oh, and any patron can send me a promo, and I will play it at the end of the episode for... your project or a project that you want to support. So even if it's not your project, but you've got a favorite podcast, send me their promo. If you have a promo for a charity or some other project that's not a podcast, send me a promo or send me a script and I will record one.
And right now in the chat, we've got the biggest of the big daddies.
Biggest of the big daddies, our top tier big daddy. Thank you, Jax. You are awesome as always. And then thank you to our lower big daddy, Jason from the Nerds with Voices, who is normally on this show. And then at the next tier, we've got thank you to Mark Cabot and Mark the Encaffeinated One. Thank you to Susanna. Thank you to Lynette. You are awesome. Thank you to Andy, Luke. And then at the lower tiers, we want to thank our number one fan, Shane. We want to thank the Radical Geek. We want to thank Justine, a.k.a. Aurora Lee 1013. Thank you to Mike. Thank you to Steve Pritchard. Thank you to Kinsey. Thank you to Ken. Thank you to Greg Larson. Thank you to Patrick Scafito. Thank you to Will. Thank you to Rich the TT, Ian, Harold, Melissa Bartel, the Bathtub Mermaid.
Jason's favorite.
You guys always get to interrupt my flow. Thank you to Susan. Thank you to Zachman. And thank you to our patron who donates through PayPal, Dagny.
Thanks, Dagny.
If
thanks,
you
everybody.
Don't want to use Patreon, you can always donate through PayPal.
I also take envelopes stuffed with cash. I have no problems.
Okay, then. Thank you so much. And we will see you all next time. Bye.
Bye.
Hi. My name's Jim. J-I-M. An ordinary name. I'm an ordinary IT guy. But I work in a really interesting place. Information technology and giant monsters. This Kaiju Life. Look it up on Apple Podcasts or on the web at kaiju.libsyn.com.
Nutty Bites is produced by Nimlas Studios under a Creative Commons Attribution No Commercial Non-Derivatives 3.0 International License. That means you can't change it without my permission. You can share it and send it to your friends. Just link back to me, my site, and everything. We live at nimlas.org, which has links to everything social media, including facebook.com/group/nuttybites and patreon.com/nukejoss, or call 347-Nutty42.